Welcome to Sport Management Review Insights. I'm your host, Vito Soprano. When I was working at a professional football club, I found the way staff and athletes behave to be quite different to my previous jobs. Some good, some not so. We know this as workplace behavior, and it's something that hasn't received much attention in the sport management research, but it is the topic for this episode. And joining us to discuss this is someone who's published prolifically on sport and the workplace. She's assistant professor in the Department of Sport and Recreation Management at Temple University. It's Liz Taylor. Welcome, Liz.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
Well, I was very excited when I saw that Liz Taylor was coming on the show. And then, no, I'm still excited. It's great. It's great to have you on.
Yeah, I don't know if I can live up to the name, but I'm going to try.
I have no doubt you will. Liz and co-authors Rosemary Ward, Matt Hummel, and Lindsay Darwin recently published Examining Intercollegiate Athletic Department Employees' Workplace Behaviors Using Latent Profile Analysis. Now, Liz, workplace behavior has received greater attention generally in the past 20 years or so. But how did this paper help our understanding of the area and for sport management?
Much of the previous research on the sport industry has used a variable-centered analysis. So, for instance, maybe a project was done on women head coaches looking at their work-family balance experiences, or looking at coaching dads and the work-family interface. So these studies are really useful in describing and understanding these variables within specific populations, but they don't tell us about the interaction of multiple variables and how they impact outcomes, or if certain variables are more common than others. So we use the latent profile analysis, and a latent profile analysis is useful to find non-obvious groupings within a sample. So what we did is we used workplace behaviors like you're talking about. We used work-family conflict and family-work conflict as our grouping variables, and then made comparisons based on demographic variables such as gender, whether or not individuals have kids, and then other workplace behaviors as well, including burnout, work addiction, and work engagement.
How did you come to think of this as an important research topic? Were you just working in a sport organization like I was and going, these people behave like a bunch of idiots. I got to figure out why. They were fine. They were very nice.
No, that's actually a really fair kind of way to look at it. So we know that sport is a really distinct context to study these workplace behaviors because of the high workplace demand. So specifically thinking about intercollegiate athletics, which is the population that we were looking at, there's a ton of weekend work, travel, late nights, really demanding organizations that they essentially want you to win or you're going to be fired. And so we just started asking questions about what can we learn that can help make workplaces better. And a lot of the research has looked at very specific populations. So thinking again about women head coaches at the Division I level or Division I conference commissioners. Well, there's only about 8 women Division I conference commissioners. So they're a great population to look at. But in terms of generalizability, they don't provide a great deal of ability to generalize with such a small population. So we decided we wanted to look at the intercollegiate athletics industry more holistically. So Matt and I and our research assistants, and they probably still hate us for this, but we collected over 30,000 emails from publicly available websites and decided that we just needed to get a larger sample. We needed to learn more about not just the top athletic directors making the millions of dollars. We needed to learn more too about the entry-level folks and the middle management. So we decided we needed to maybe take a more holistic approach to learning about these employees and really wanted to learn as much as we could. So that's why we included so many different variables: work-family conflict, family-work conflict, engagement, burnout, work addiction, a whole slew of demographic variables. I think our survey was over 90 questions. I'm actually surprised so many people completed it, but that was kind of the purpose behind it, was to take a really broad strokes approach and just get as much detail as we could.
Yeah, surprising because they are overworked. As I can remember, it is a lot of weekends, a lot of craziness. So that makes a lot of sense. Now, for the research, you actually use social role theory as your theoretical framework. Can you tell us a bit more about that and why you thought that was a useful theoretical framework to take here?
Yeah, absolutely. So social role theory has been used quite a bit in sport research. And the reason it's been used so often is that it's useful in examining the experiences of women in male-dominated industries like sport. So what social role theory posits is that sex differences and similarities in behavior reflect gender roles and beliefs that in turn represent people's perceptions of men and women and their roles in society. And really, that's just a fancy way of saying that a person's sex or gender drives beliefs about what they should do and what's acceptable work for them to engage in. So a lot of the previous research in sport suggested that women who were leaders, athletic administrators, head coaches, folks would perceive them negatively because they were engaging in more masculine roles. And so we use it as a guiding framework because it really helps tell the story of what is often happening in the sport industry. And it also helped us create our hypotheses. So we hypothesized that women would be overrepresented in the latent profiles with higher levels of work family conflict and family work conflict. And then also folks, both men and women with children, would be overrepresented. And so it really helped us kind of frame the study and helped us create our hypotheses.
As you mentioned, you actually did a very broad study here. I think you said 30,000 people that you got in contact with, 30,000 emails, and you developed cross-sectional survey design with I think 4,672 in the end of these NCAA athletes. And you're examining their latent profiles, as you mentioned. Now, of course, you would examine latent profiles. Everyone knows that, right? But just for those who might not know what exactly that means, can you just tell us what that is and how did you go about doing that?
So what latent profiles do, and I actually had to learn this, Rosemarie is the stats whiz. And so she sat down with me. She's actually my advisor when I got my master's and one of my favorite people to learn from. She's fantastic. She's brilliant. And so I was telling her about all this data we collected. And she basically said what you said, we should absolutely do a latent profile analysis on this, right? And I was like, yeah, duh, right? So she actually had to kind of sit me down and really talk me through it. And essentially what a latent profile analysis does is it creates these groupings based on their levels of how they scored in the grouping variables. So we used work family conflict and family work conflict as our grouping variables. And basically what the latent profile does is it creates groups. And we ended up with four profiles or four groups. And they're grouped based on their scores of that inventory. So they group together the folks who score the highest on work family conflict. They group together the middle folks and then the lowest levels of those. So essentially, it's grouping together based on your scores of or your levels of work family and family work conflict, as opposed to grouping together all the men in the study or all the women in the study. So it's kind of taking a little bit of a backward approach to how we typically analyze these issues, finding non-obvious groupings based on levels of work family conflict and family work conflict.
Now, over 4,500 responses, 90 questions. My mathematics is terrible, but I think that's a lot of data, isn't it? How do you go about categorizing, analyzing all that data?
Yeah, no, that is a lot of data. And it was really fun to see so many people filling out the questionnaire. And I think it all goes back to your point of employees recognize that there are challenges within the industry. And so as we were sending out the survey, we were getting responses back from the participants saying, will you share the results with me? I'm really interested to learn more. Like, you're so right. We're overworked. We're underpaid. We're understaffed. And so I think that's why we got such a large response, is that these are topics that employees in the sport industry are really interested in learning more about. And so we really sat down with Rosemarie and let her drive the analysis and say, these are the relationships based on our theory that we should study. Here's the comparisons that we should make, and so on and so forth. So obviously we, as we were cleaning the data, we created the composite scores for all the scales and ran just the basic demographic variables to see, you know, how many men, how many women, what positions they were in, and so on and so forth. But we really let Rosemarie kind of take over and work her magic with all of the stats, which is something so awesome to get to do.
What were the key findings? What were those important results you got from this data?
one thing that was really cool about this project is that it allowed us to, like I said before, kind of analyze the data in a way that hasn't been done with these workplace behaviors before. And so our main two hypotheses using social role theory were that women would be overrepresented in profiles with the highest levels of conflict, and then folks with children would be overrepresented in profiles with the highest levels of conflict. And what is meant by overrepresented is what we believe they should essentially be in there by chance. So if they're overrepresented, that just means that it's more than we thought would happen. And so what we actually found is that women were overrepresented in the profiles with the lowest levels of work, family, and family work conflict, and men were overrepresented in the profiles with the highest levels of conflict. So essentially, hypothesis one of this study, what we found was switched. We thought women would have the most, the highest levels, men actually had the highest levels. And then what we found with children is what we hypothesized, is that those with children were overrepresented in profiles with the highest levels of work, family, and family work conflict, and underrepresented in the profiles with the lowest levels. And so essentially what that means is most of our previous research in the sport industry, with the exception of a few recent studies by Jeff Graham and Marlene Dixon, have suggested that women experience higher levels of work-family conflict. They have more responsibilities on their personal side, so housework, childcare, all that sort of stuff. And so that creates more conflict. We actually found the opposite, is that men were overrepresented in these groups with the highest levels. So what that suggests is that these conflicts, work-family and family-work conflict, they impact all employees, but they impact employees uniquely. And what I mean by that is that the men in the sample were more likely to have children. So that's likely why we found more men with higher levels of work, family, and family work conflict, because we know that if you have kids, there are going to be additional responsibilities that you have to have, whether it's daycare drop off and pick up, or whether it's staying home when you have a sick kid, or so on and so forth. We just know that there is more to it, more to the non-work story when you have children in the workplace. And so that was one thing that we found. And this kind of reflects previous research, specifically work that was recently published in the Journal of Sport Management by Ariane Waite and a few colleagues, that women are leaving the industry prematurely. So what Ariane and her team did is they created these archetypes, and they saw that as you progressed through the industry from entry-level employee to senior leader, there was a flip. So when you started, there were more women. When you get to the highest levels, there were more men. So that kind of reflects our findings as well, is women aren't having children while they're in the industry, potentially because it's too demanding, the weekends, the travel, the nights, the all of that. And then we also know that position could impact this as well. So men are more likely to hold leadership positions within intercollegiate athletics. They're more likely to be head coaches. They're more likely to be athletic directors. So I feel like we have been telling part of the story with all of our previous research. And what we were really trying to do is dig deeper and figure out a little bit more about the whole story. And what is it? What are all the impacts that could be, I guess, influencing levels of conflict within the workplace?
You've spoken there a bit about what this actually means, but from a theoretical perspective, how does this advance our understanding of the theory?
Actually, what we found is in contrast with the theory. What social role theory suggests is that based on societal norms, women should have higher levels of conflict because women are the ones who should be doing the childcare and the outside of work duties. But we actually found contradictory to that, that men are the ones with higher levels. And so in the sport industry, there's something about the way that men and women progress through the industry and the way that men are able to keep their career and build a family that women are not able to do. And this directly reflects some work from Jeff Graham and Marlene Dixon that suggests that when men are in the industry, they have supportive partners. So they secure positions, and their work is specifically looking at head coaches. So they secure positions as a head coach, and they have a partner who is willing to stay at home and do the childcare. So they don't actually have to do a lot of the duties that the women employees were reporting having to do. So it looks like the sport industry operates differently than other industries that have been examined using social role theory.
It is fascinating, and it's probably not the first time I think people in sport management may have heard that sport is different, sport is unique.
Absolutely. And, you know, there is something about the way that people who work in sport love it, right? So like a lot of the emails that we were getting from participants or a lot of the qualitative comments that we got at the end, they would say things like, I'm overworked and I'm underpaid, but I love it. I love this industry. I would never want to leave it. I would never want a different job. You know, this is my purpose. This is my calling and so on and so forth. So there's something really distinct about the sport context and the folks who work in it. They seem to love the grind. They seem to love the 24/7 demands of working in the industry. And that doesn't mean they all love it. That doesn't mean they love it all the time, but it is a really distinct and interesting industry to look at these different workplace behaviors because it is so different than a typical 9-to-5.
As you mentioned, that there's a lot going on in sport workplace behavior, people overworked definitely. So from that perspective, what advice would you give to those working in the sport industry, to sport managers, to those in charge of a sport organization who are thinking, I want to make this place a better workplace for people to be in?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I think sometimes where research and practice get lost, right, is that we are often so focused on the theoretical implications and the writing of the manuscript that we sometimes forget that folks working in the industry don't have time or maybe even the desire to read a 40-page research paper detailing the results of a latent profile analysis. And I wholeheartedly accept and embrace that. But something, you know, specific that we found in this project is that those folks who had higher levels of work-family conflict and family-work conflict, so those ones who were in the profiles with the highest levels, also had the highest levels of burnout and work addiction. And those with the most engagement had lower levels of conflict. So we're seeing a really direct path between these problematic behaviors and also between the positive workplace engagement behaviors, right? So thinking about things that leaders can do, they really need to be thinking about policies that they put in place that allow employees to better navigate the relationship between their work and non-work behavior. So everybody uses the term work-family balance. I don't know that that's possible in any industry. It's definitely not possible in the sport industry. But what employers need to do is they need to find ways to help employees kind of integrate their work and their family together. So perhaps that is work from home policies or flex time, where employees are able to take time out of the office. Say that you have a competition on a Wednesday night and you are in the gym or on the court or, you know, the track until midnight, and you probably have to be back in the office at 8 a.m. the next day. Perhaps the employer says you don't have to be here until noon, or maybe work from home the next day, something like that, that allows employees to think about their well-being, focus on their well-being, take time for their family when they otherwise wouldn't have the ability. They might also offer things like family travel opportunities. So something we saw with the NCAA women's basketball tournament this past year, which was a total fail on the part of the NCAA, one of very many fails in the recent years, is that they put a limit because of COVID, they put a limit on the number of people the team could travel with. And they included nursing children in that list. So what they did is they essentially forced mothers who were nursing to pick between a support staff employee, an athletic trainer, an academic advisor, and their children. And so they created this situation where they were forcing women to make really tough decisions. And if they would have just recognized the need for women to have these children with them and not count against the limit, it would have made their lives a lot simpler. It would have made decision-making a lot easier. It would have saved the NCAA a lot of headaches. But because they weren't thinking like that, it essentially created this opportunity for us to have a conversation around it. What sorts of supports do we need to offer specifically to women who have children or men who have children, right? Because the men had to do the same thing. They had to make those decisions about whether or not they would travel with their families because they had limits. So the ability to keep work and family completely separate And that's whatever family means to you. It doesn't have to be a traditional, the way we traditionally think of family, but they need to be better. Organizations need to be better at creating policies that enhance employees' abilities to think about life outside of work. This probably happens in every industry, but once you make it to the top and you are making the big bucks, we know not everybody in sport makes the big bucks, but the GMs, the head coaches, the athletic administrators at the top, they do make the big bucks. You can forget what it's like to be scrounging to pay your bills and not having the support for your family that you need. So I think that they really need to start focusing on how to ensure that they're not losing talent, because that's ultimately what's going to happen. If employees, for whatever reason, don't continue to work in the industry, we are going to lose really great employees in the sport industry, and that's not what we want.
Definitely not. Thanks so much, Liz. It's been great.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for listening to Sport Management Review Insights. Head to the Sport Management Review website to check out all the latest research that's being published, including the article discussed in this episode, examining intercollegiate athletic department employees' workplace behaviors using latent profile analysis. That's it for this episode, but of course, there are many more you can listen to on your favorite podcast player. And if you can follow the podcast and give us a 5-star rating, that'd be great too. Until next time, it's bye for now.